Do you see the deals on these brands?
Of course you can't. This is a podcast.
But when you go to Ross this spring, you'll see brands you know at prices you love. We're talking all the shoes, hues, and oohs at 20 to 60% off department store prices. Go see the savings at Ross.
Good morning, everyone. It's Todd.
And Julie.
With Chrisley Confessions. Really, I'm just going to let you do it because I'm so excited that I feel like a schoolgirl.
Yes, yes. We are super excited. Our producer and Nick and I were just saying that, you know, Todd must have some really special people here because he's on time. And that's like a first.
That's shade, folks. So, what it means is you can't do this show without me.
Okay. Gotcha. So we are super excited today. Todd and I have been talking about where we want to see this podcast go and how we want to see it evolve and how it grow. And I think that our guests today are the perfect people to help us do that and to be an example of truly where we want this podcast to end up
And I think not just where we want this podcast to end up, but it goes back to our therapy sessions that we have every Monday with our Christian counselor, Steve, who said to me, have you used your platform to be more of a service to God?
Absolutely.
And I came back to you and said, we are not using our platform to further what our true message is.
Right.
And so I woke up. This has been like a week. It was December the 1st. God woke me up at like 6:30 in the morning, and I always check my phone right away to make, because, you know, I got a bunch of heathens out there. So, I mean, I got to make sure, you know, they all doing okay. They alive. Ain't hurt nobody. No, they ain't been hurt. So I grab my phone, I start checking. I had no text messages from any of my kids.
And first of all, folks, let me preface this by saying that my husband lays in the bed and, you know, he has a pair of AirPods right beside. Literally, he just has to reach over and grab them. But he refuses to do that. So at any given time of the day, middle of the night, 5 o'clock in the morning, if he decides to listen to something, well, we all listen to it, or I do anyway. So, go ahead and finish your story.
So, folks, and this is true because what she says is that I'm just like my mother, that, you know, when Faye's up, everybody's up. She says when Todd's up, everybody's up. So, I get my phone and this song comes on. It's called Take Me In. I talked about this last week, folks, on the podcast, from this group called The War and Treaty. And it literally was, it sent cold chills throughout my body. And I kept replaying it. And when I got to the part to where Michael does this whole, you know, Luther Vandross, you know, just growl, I'm like, what did I do?
Yeah, he was like up.
I literally jumped up out of the bed and I said, these people have to be heard. And so I kept listening. And I started, because folks, any of you that, if you don't know me, I'm electronically challenged. But
I think it's technology.
Or technology challenged. Yes. Yeah. And so I go to YouTube so I could get the video. And then I had to get Julie to help me figure out. You know, how I needed to send this. And I started sending this video to everyone. Now, it has been absolutely life-altering for me. And, you know, I literally said, these people have to be heard, and then I reached out to them. And that, my friends, is how my passion for the War and Treaty came to place, because I messaged and Tanya and Michael, but I don't know who I was messaging with. And then I went and sat down with, because, you know, we do our podcast in Jay DeMarcus's studio every Wednesday, and he cannot help himself but to try to crash my party, and he just walked in. Jay, you want to say hello to everyone?
Hello. Thanks for inviting me down.
Well, I wanted you to meet what is going to become mine and your new best friends. This is Michael. Tanya.
Michael, Tanya, how are you?
Pretty
this
great.
Is a guy that played in a little band called Rascal Flatts. If y'all haven't heard of him. And I claim him as my best friend.
Oh my goodness.
These are the two people that I've been raving to you about. So, folks, I wanted Jay to meet them. This is your first time meeting them.
Very first time. Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
And
oh my goodness.
Yesterday, our lunch conversation was about what?
About you two.
And I
hope y'all don't suck because I got out of bed for this.
I literally sent him a text message, folks. I sent Jay a text message upstairs and said, I'm down here with my people.
What did I say?
And he said, I'm in my pajamas. I said, no one cares. No one's trying to sleep with you. So
not even anyone in the house.
Well, that's a personal problem. But, you know, so I am so excited, folks, to welcome Michael and Tanya with the Warren Treaty today. Michael, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tanya.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.
He was.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
So, you know, I do want you to know that I believe that God led me to you. I believe that with all of my heart. I have literally, you don't want to know the things I've been doing with your song playing in the background. I have showered. I've shaved. I've done everything you can do. Well, we ain't going to get into that.
Uh-oh.
I gave that song Take Me In a whole new
meaning. I was going to say that. I was trying to keep it clean, but I was going to say.
You can't do that with me. I'll always go there.
It's fitting, but Take Me In.
Right? And so, you know, I literally, there are just some people that before you ever meet them, you think, are they going to be everything that I have built up in my heart and in my mind? And you two are what I had envisioned. I knew that you were going to be warm, loving people. And I felt that the moment that you got out of the car this morning. And, you know, as Nick said, you know, these must be special people because Todd's on time today. You know.
And, I have to interject here because, you know, Todd has been communicating with you guys and I haven't. But I've heard the song many times. And when you hear the song, it does, and I think it was described in an article that it stops you in your tracks, and I think the reason that it stops you in your tracks is because you have a story, and we all have a story, and that's what we have made this podcast and want to make it about, telling people's story
and giving people an opportunity to use this platform as a way of telling your story.
So I'm sure that you all know what a subscription box is by now. In fact, you've probably already have a favorite meal kit or pet box. But did you know there's one great place where you can shop thousands of subscriptions no matter your interest? Well, there is. Welcome to CrateJoy. CrateJoy is the world's first and only subscription box marketplace. You can shop over thousands of unique boxes and gifts for just about anything you can imagine. Even better, you choose the subscription length so you're not locked into anything. Subscription boxes for women, for men, for kids, and any special people in your life. CrateJoy makes the perfect holiday gift. Got a creative kid, a brand new mom, a veteran grill master or budding mixologist on your list, coffee aficionado, families at home, all the above. There's a crate for each of them and so much more. I literally had this conversation this morning with a friend of mine who was talking about CrateJoy and how much she loves just a subscription box in general. But this kind of gives you anything and everything. And with the holidays creeping up on us quickly, this is the perfect gift. I mean, it makes it easy to find that perfect gift for anyone and everyone in your life. The hardest part of buying gifts is getting someone something cool and unique, and maybe something that they wouldn't buy for themselves. So CrateJoy does all of that. This year, above all years, we're looking for creative ways to show loved ones we care and spread much needed cheer. With CrateJoy, you'll show you care with personalized gifts that keep giving long after the holidays are done. You can find categories you love, including escape rooms and mystery boxes, boxes to boost each version of you with self-care and personal growth, cool cocktail kits, monthly book clubs, DIY and craft kits. This is truly one of the best gifts that I'm going to be given this year, and I'm super excited to be able to do that. There's still time to find the perfect gift for everyone on your list. You can shop thousands of subscription boxes all in one place and get 30% off your first box when you sign up at cratejoy.com/cc. That's right. Sign up today at cratejoy.com/cc. That's CRATEJOY.com/cc to get 30% off your first box and shop Crate Joy's holiday specials. Crate Joy, get joy delivered right to your door.
So, you know, Michael, you're a vet. You know, we're hugely, hugely supportive of our veterans. You know, we talk about it just about every week on this podcast that, you know, we give all of this government aid to countries that, you know, do that are out here doing harm to us, but we won't take care of our own, mm-hmm. the ones that we send to the front line.
Yeah.
And then we bring these guys and girls back, men and women, and they've been out on the front line and they've been traumatized with the things that they've seen and how they've had to step outside of their raising. And they're in, a, you know, because the Army and the Armed Forces is a whole other world. Mm-hmm. It becomes your life.
Yeah.
And you have to be retrained and reprogrammed. Right. And then our government reprograms you to do what they need you to do. Mm-hmm. And then when they don't need you anymore, then you're expected to go back and doing exactly what you was doing. And it's not that easy.
Yeah.
I mean, would you agree with that?
Totally.
Absolutely. And I think this is where Michael was 3 years ago. His story, which totally touched my heart this morning, because most of you guys know that I had a brother who passed away in 2002. And when I read this story, it takes me to that place. But there's so many people that are dealing with post-traumatic stress. And just a little bit of the story, because I want our callers and I want our listeners to know it. You were at a place where you just felt like you couldn't go on anymore. Do you want to step in from there and just...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I was just tired of failing. I was tired of not living up to the promises I had made to my beauty queen. And I just was... We were behind on the rent, you know. No food.
We all been there.
No food in the cupboard. My son, at the time, he was six, and I just had it. I was done, and I thought, well, you know what? The next best thing, the quickest thing for me is life insurance. You know, I wasn't thinking of nothing but taking care of my family. And ending whatever it was, because I was having nightmares. I was going through a whole lot. And I had my mind made up that particular day in 2017. I said, this is it. No letters, none of dramatics. You know, I just was ready. And right at that moment, I remember sitting on my stairs in the foyer of the house, just looking at everything, and I knew what I was going to go do. And I like to tell people, love snitched on me. And then Tanya.
I love that.
Tanya comes walking over, and she had called we were living in Albion, Michigan at the time, and she called the Albion Police Department. And they came in the home, and I'm just still sitting on the stairs, and she walked right between my legs, got down on her knees, and held my head up and said, I know that you have a plan to take your life. She's like, I know it. I can see it in your eyes. I can feel it. She's like, but if you can just give me 5 more minutes to love you, I promise I'll make all of this make sense. And the police department was standing behind, you know, saying, come on, Mike, listen to her. You know, we're all here for you. And at that time, I just felt like she was, you know, she was telling the truth. You know, like they were not lying to me. It wasn't that they were trying to do their job. I felt like somebody for once actually saw what I wasn't saying and saw past and looked beyond and saw that I was broken and I was getting ready to end it all. And I'm still in the 5 more minutes. I'm here, you know. And
that's amazing. That's...
That goes back to me saying that I knew when I heard the song that I was meant to know you. I think that there's so many people in this world that's hurting. And it's not a blue side or a red side. It's not, everything's not always black and white. And, but what everything should be is about humanity. It should be about loving each other as our brothers and sisters in Christ. And I knew when this song, folks, if you have not listened to it, you have to go and stream this song, Take Me In. It took me so many different directions. And Tanya, when you sing, that's a God gift. That's a God gift.
Yes.
And I don't think that we take the time to look and say, or to give thanks to God every day for the little things that we do that other people think is magic. We don't see it as magic.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm magic. I mean, I feel magical every day.
Yeah.
Yes, I tell myself that.
Yes, you are.
But, you know, I kept saying to Julie, you know, we were riding out in the country on Saturday to look at a farm. And what song was playing?
Yes.
And I said, they have to have a voice. There's got to be a better way for them to be heard. And, you know, for all of you folks out there who have followed the show Chrisley Knows Best since the beginning, you know, we like to say that we have, our show has touched a lot of people. But, you know, Brett Young, who is a huge country music artist. Now, you both know Brett.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brett was on our show in second season. And his career, and this, and Brett, good looking guy, great. I mean, just a great guy. I mean, I love Brett Young and have a great relationship with him. Our family loves him. His wife, he's got a beautiful wife that their love story, you know, transcends so many different things.
Right. And they've sweet got baby.
The most beautiful child. And Brett had been doing this whole thing, kind of like what you guys are doing. And he ends up on Chrisley Knows Best. And then God opened the floodgates. And then he went to Big Machine. And he was signed by Big Machine. And then the rest is history. And, you know, I had that same feeling about Brett when I heard him sing the first time that I have about you. Because Brett has a way of giving a song such raw emotion.
Oh, yeah.
And you have that. And so I said to Julie as we were driving, I said, they have magic and it's there. I said, it's just like Brett. I says, they have a magic. And then Savannah, you know, another guy that we've been, you know, involved with, Matt Stale, who did Prayed for You. And, you know, his agent or manager sent me that song and wanted Savannah to appear in the video. And I turned it down. I said, no. I says, she's, you know, her schedule's too booked. And, you know, and Savannah's my hardest working child. She literally works every day of her life. And I turned it down. And do you remember that morning I was standing there in the bathroom, I had my laptop, and I was looking for our personal banker. Her name's Karen. And the publicist for Matt Stale, her name was the same as our personal banker. And I went to hit an email because I thought I'd just put in the search engine, Karen, and it came up her, and the song started playing again. That's God again.
That's it.
And so I stood there and kept listening and kept listening, and I called Ash and said, I can move two things, but you have to do this photo shoot in one day. Mm. You have to shoot this video in one day. That's all I can give you. He said, we'll make it happen. And we did the video for Prayed for You. And I mean, I don't take any credit for that because I mean, that really was, you know, Matt and Ash. And then Savannah was, you know, kind of, you know, she and Nick were in the video. And that song shot straight to the top. I mean, it was a huge success. And I say that God steers me in the direction of how I can be used in his service and his glory.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's why y'all are here today. I have to tell you, I've been so excited about this week. I don't follow up on a lot of stuff because I've got so many people around me that does it. But did I not message and say, I need y'all to get your COVID test?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
What did you call me out for this morning?
I'm like, you did get the COVID test, right? And he's like, Yeah, I said, are you sure?
She like, I was lying to her, which I would have lied. I would have lied if it meant that y'all were not coming.
But
I would have lied.
But you, Tanya, actually had COVID, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
how bad was it for you?
I had it bad. I had it for about 30 days in March.
I was March. Mm-hmm. See?
Yep.
We're meant
I was
to
March.
Be.
No taste, no
Mine
you know,
was what, March the
12th
or
14th? No, March 23rd.
March 23rd. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
March 23rd?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was sick with you at the same time.
I was in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yeah. I was in the hospital for 4 days.
Wow. I was home because it took me 9 days to get the results back.
Oh, my gosh.
From March the, I guess it was the 12th when we got back from New York until maybe like the 20th or something.
I lost all sense of taste
me too.
And smell.
Yep.
Which,
eyesight.
You know, when I was dating in my earlier days, wouldn't have been a bad thing.
Oh, my gosh. He's awful.
But,
so bad.
You know,
he's so bad.
You
got to go to church after you leave here. You got to pray.
But, you know, I was very sick. And now, and you were that sick as well.
I was.
And, Michael, you didn't get it.
No.
I
See?
Had it too.
You had
mine
too?
Was mild.
She didn't
I was
nothing.
Sick for like 2 days.
This is I'm up there dying. Like literally dying in a hospital. And then she says, I got COVID too.
Like, get away
from
here.
Right on doing everything she was doing.
Yeah.
And then you'd hear every 8 hours
a little cough.
And I'm like, what the hell is that? And she said, Todd, it's the cough from COVID.
It's the COVID cough.
I'm like, I was dying. You dumped me out like trash at the emergency room entrance. Couldn't even come in with it. And I was like, wait a minute. Does people, I mean, I'm tied. I can't be dumped at the curb. She dumped my ass at the curb.
Get out here.
They flat didn't care who I was. They said, they came out like in hazmat suits. I thought
oh,
I
yeah.
was damn.
Like
I
E.T.
literally thought I was Cher.
It was like E.T. Like the movie E.T. Sure. The big bubble.
Yes.
I was like, what is this?
I was like, good Lord, this is serious.
Yeah.
You know, once I got in the hospital, I don't have no recollection of the hospital.
Wow.
I have no recollection of who treated me, who was in there with me. I know that my daughter, they wouldn't give them any information, and my daughter, Savannah, sent food for everyone on that floor, you know, so that she could try to work her way in.
She's good.
And she got her information. It's amazing what pizza will do for people. So let's talk about your journey kind of in your music career.
Well, it's a very interesting one. For me, in 2003, I had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 01, I had the baby. And 2003 is when I was like, you know what? Whatever I'm doing is not going to work for this baby. So I need to go join the Army. Mm-hmm. And all my father and my uncles served. And so I just felt like it was my time to go and serve. Plus, I knew that I would have free rent.
Right.
You know, at the time they were talking about education. You know, it was going to be free, and that never panned through. But, you know, I joined. But I didn't realize I was joining during the time of war.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I joined, and I had a sergeant major in the family giving me advice. He said, here's what you're going to pray for. You're going to pray for, you're going to pray that you don't get infantry. You're going to pray that you don't go to Germany. And if you don't go to Germany, that means you don't go to war. Mm-hmm. Like, pray those three things.
Mm-hmm.
So after training and everything, it comes down the pike that I'm going to Alaska and that I'm going to get a logistics job.
Mm-hmm.
And the unit I'm going to is non-deployable. I'm like, yes, like, God is with me, man. Like, yeah, you know, I can get with the religion thing. Like, okay, cool. So it's about time for me to leave on the day. While I'm headed to the military and processing station in Baltimore, the recruiter gets a phone call to halt. It's like, he just pulls over on the side of the road. He's like, what? And he says to me, Trotter, in all of my 15 years of doing this, I have never seen this happen before. So I'm like, what's happening? You know, like,
right.
Did I get a better assignment or something?
Right.
He's like, brother, you're going to Germany. And I'm like, okay, well, that's one out of three. So I'm still good. And he's like, and it says here that your unit is an infantry unit. I'm like, oh, God. And he's like, I want to prepare you now. Your unit is already at war. So I'm like, boo-hoo. I'm literally falling apart. And, you know, and I already played the scenarios out of my head. I know that if there's any soldier that's going to die, it's me. Because I am not a soldier. I'm like, I'm going to get killed. I was.
Imagine you're Brian.
I was like, this is going down, man. Like, and I'm just boo-hoo crying and everything. And I get out there. And my boots touch ground, and the captains and sergeants are giving this incredible gladiator kind of speech. Like, we're going to kill the enemy. And all the soldiers are like, hoorah, and they're screaming. And I'm like, hell no. I'm crying. I'm like, man, I ain't supposed to be here. And so long story short, Sheets, Captain Sheets, he had read in my file that I love to listen to music. I didn't say I sang or anything or write at the time. And the base we were staying was the forward operating base was Saddam's. And it was one of the palaces. And we went, that's where I was going to be staying. And I was bombed the hell out. I mean, we had already tore it up. But in the basement, there was one of Saddam's pianos. And he led me down there and said, hey, listen, when you feel like you can't find your way home, come down here. These are exact words. Come down here. And do some music and go home. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, sure. You know, at the time, I'm still like, you know, I want to go home for real. Like, right. Like, you know, but I will go down in the basement. And because a lot of people don't know, when you're at war, there's so much downtime and stupid time. It's just like you're not doing anything. It's like you're in Iraq, it's almost like you're just waiting to get shot, right, or waiting for something bad to happen before you can respond, right? And that is deafening. And that is sickening. So it's a lot of what ifs, and it starts to control your mind. So I went down there during those what if moments, and I would try to one finger it. And I thought I was real good when I learned to play Lean on Me, because it's just like one, two, three, four. And, you know, and I had this tune I was working on, I had gotten really good with my finger, and I was able to spread my hands and stuff. And because I come from a musical family, my uncle Zelbert is a prolific pianist and organist, and my granny is as well. So I knew it was inside of me. I just didn't know how to get it unlocked. But I wanted to show Robert what I had learned down there. And he told me he'd hear it when he come back. He had to go on a mission. And I think when he never returned, well, he returned, but he returned dead. And I think that was the thing that unlocked me emotionally, gave me the emotional connection I need to have with that kind of instrument. And I wrote my very first song about that situation right there, you know. And so I went to my superiors. And we were having a military funeral out in the war. And I said, I wrote a song, and I would like to do it for Sheets Memorial. And it was two guys, Sheets and Aaron and Lott, Sergeant and Lott. They were having their memorial at the same time. Military memorials are eerie enough, but to be having the funeral in the war is the worst thing ever. And it's like, you got to do it because you got to honor, you know, your battle buddies. But no one thinks about the psychological trauma it's causing for those guys standing there looking at these boots, looking at the gun stuck in the boots. The helmet is on top of the butt stock of the gun. And then looking at the dog tags. And then the way they do the military funerals is the sergeant does a roll call. So he'll say, Todd Chrisley, here. You know, Tanya here, and he'll do all these things, and then he'll call the deceased name, and it's silence. And then the next thing you hear him say is, he is no longer with us. And then the colonel says, he was a great soldier. And then the 21 gun salute, and then those taps. That's all you have to look forward to. And I wanted to change that. So they said, well, where do you want to sing at? I said, I actually want to sing right after the taps. And they said, that's against, that goes against military custom. Like, nothing comes after the taps. And I have no rank.
Right.
I am a private nothing.
Right.
You know, and I had a first sergeant who loved me, you know, Robert Guilford. And I told him, and he was a believer. Mm-hmm. And I told him.
That is a huge difference when you're a believer.
Definitely. And I told him, I said, I know that I'm supposed to be singing this song at this point in the program. And he said, well, doggone Trotter, you know, I'm going to talk to Peter Jones, who was our light colonel at the time. He's a general now. And Peter is, he has a, he is beautiful, beautiful gentleman. Black guy, Sergeant Guilford, white guy, Peter L. Jones. One comes drenched in the church. Another guy comes drenched in tradition. And for them both to say, screw tradition, this is where Trotter needs to be. And then Peter looks at me and says, now, Trotter, you sure as hell better be able to sing. Because the general is coming. And if you, boy, if you can't sing, we're in some. And I sang the song I wrote. They had, the chaplain had a keyboard out there, a little thing. I sang it. And in the military, stoic. You're not supposed to show any emotion. So 987 troops come the tears. They're weeping. They break formation to clap. And when it was over, Peter Jones changed my job. Peter Jones told me, he said, Trotter, for the remainder of the time we're in Iraq and when we return, your new job is to write songs about the fallen and sing them at the memorials. He said, you wrote that, right? I said, yes, sir. So he would send me to the units. I would learn about the fallen like a reporter. I'll create a song, you know, about copyrights and nothing like that. It was literally just about telling that soldier's story from a different side, from the side of healing for us. And all the soldiers, they said, man, that brought so much healing to us that day, man. And that's what I would do for the remainder of my time in Iraq. So God changed my job. And that's when
that's
I knew.
That's because you changed lives.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Okay, guys, can you believe that the holidays are just around the corner? And if you're looking for a way to stay connected with your loved ones during the holidays, well, Skylight Frames is your answer. It's the perfect gift for that. If you aren't able to visit your parents, your grandparents, given the current situation, Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. Skylight Frame is a photo frame. You can update instantly by email from anywhere. It's a great way to feel close to those you love, even when you're separated. It sets up effortlessly in under 60 seconds. You just plug it in, use the touchscreen to connect to your wireless network, and enjoy. Sending photos to Skylight is effortless. Everyone in the family can just email them to your personal Skylight email address, and they'll pop up in seconds. Multiple people can send photos to the frame, so it's a great way to keep large networks of friends and family in touch. It has a black and white mat. It looks like a real photo frame and adds a beautiful touch to your home. Skylight Frame has a gorgeous 10-inch touchscreen. You can swipe through the photos with your finger and even tap to thank the person who sent the photo. There's 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your Skylight, they'll offer you a full refund. You can also preload it with your favorite photos for a personalized gift. You can import photos of you and your significant others that they didn't even know that you have. You know, I love the Skylight Frame. I personally have one, and I have given one to my mother for her birthday. She loves it because my kids can send photos because they live in another state. So it's just a way for us to stay connected and for her to constantly see the kids and see them changing. So now, as a special offer, you can get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com and enter code confessions. That's right. To get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame, just go to skylightframe.com and enter code confessions. That's SKYLIGHT FRAME BrianLee.com, promo code confessions.
Well, I tell you the short thing about what happened out there as a private, you know. One of the our colonel, our chaplain left. He could not handle it. He could not handle the war. He was a new chaplain. And he was preaching a story about David. And he said, when the trouble comes, be like David and stand firm. And then a bomb hit. And he was like, ah, and he jumped out the tent.
He was not David.
He was not David.
Y'all, he jumped out the tent and never returned. And so we had a big mission. We were going to go in and try to like kick some tail. And the general and the colonels, and they're giving this, once again, one of those gladiator kind of speeches about killing the enemy, kill, 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 kill. And the soldiers are standing there, hoorah. And I hear a voice say, pray. So I'm like, I'm not a prayer. I mean, you know, I don't do that. You know, I'm like, man, grandma says either God's voice or the devil's voice. And I know this got to be the devil because I can't pray for a lick, you know. And then, you know, he says, pray with everybody. So I knew a couple of Bible thumpers and I grabbed those guys to pray. But then it still kept saying, pray with everybody. So I had to go to my sergeant major. And this guy is a powerful atheist. And he, you know, and there's some speculations that he might be racist, too, because he was just mean. I mean.
Well, if you ain't a believer in Christ and you have no. Here's my thing when it comes to being an atheist. Because I had a former business partner that I found out after he had embezzled all this money from us that was an atheist. If you believe in nothing, you'll believe anything.
Oh, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my thing is if you don't, if at my darkest days, I've always had my faith to turn back to. Mm-hmm. And that always prevented me from feeling like I was solely by myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
And I actually feel bad for people who don't believe because where do they go? In your time of heartache and grief, where do you go if you believe in nothing?
And I think he was just a big a ball of misunderstanding because I had to go to him and ask for permission to pray over the entire fleet. Now, I'm not a chaplain. And if someone's going to let me do it, it's going to be this guy right here. And I was terrified because, again, he was just this mean guy. And I walked over to him. And he's like, what? And I'm like, oh, man, I need to pray. We're talking about doing all this. I said, there's no chaplain. Nobody's talked to God. I need to pray. And he looks at me and he goes, well, all right, then, little minister. And he yells over to the colonel and says, Colonel, Trotter wants to pray over everybody. He said, let him pray. And I remember standing up on this little picnic table and it was just so cinematic. It was the weirdest thing. I would get down on one knee on the picnic table, all 980 something troops. Get down on one knee. I lay my weapon down on the picnic table. They lay their weapons down in the sand, which is a major no-no. And then there's no covering. I take my helmet off, sit it on the table. They take their helmets off, sit them down, including the sergeant major and the colonel. Every single person.
That's God working through you.
And the prayer was literally probably 15 seconds. I said, hey, God, here we are. We got plans, but what do you want to do? I said, and we'll listen. I said, Jesus Christ, now pray, man. And all the troops was just like, hell yeah, Trotter, short prayer. Yeah. We didn't kill nobody. In fact, we ended up taking our MREs, feeding the town, hiring some of those same townsmen. And then we end up getting some intel because one of the guys wanted to come forward and just say, hey, you guys are good people. Here's what I know. And we didn't lose. From that point on, we didn't lose not another soldier.
Oh, my
love
God.
That. Yeah. So, Tanya, tell me about your story.
Well, I started out in Washington, D.C. My father was from New Bern, North Carolina, who actually met my mom in Panama because he was in the Army. Mm-hmm. So my family, everyone serves in the military. And he and my mom met, had my brother over there, and then they moved us to Washington, D.C. And I attended
a little Baptist church on the hill,
right?
Where I decided that early on, I guess I saw my brother sing. I was about 7 years old, and I was like, whatever he just did to make those people feel like that,
I
want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I would just watch him do it all the time. And I remember coming to him at this time, I had to be about 9. And I was like, I want to do what you do, you know? And he was like, well, if you want to do what I do. And he was about 14, had a little after school job. And he said, well, I'm going to get you a Whitney Houston record and a Jennifer Holiday record.
Oh, have mercy.
And a Jennifer Holiday record. He was like, and if you can mimic these voices and you can mimic this sound, then you can sing. And I just started doing it. I would go in the basement. We had our basement was empty.
Because you've got a lot of Jennifer Holiday.
I love. Yes. I was obsessed with Jennifer Holiday, Whitney Houston, Mahalia Jackson, this lady in my church, Genobia Jeter. Growing up, I was just obsessed. And my brother would put me through these vocal challenges. You know, he was like, oh, you didn't hit that note right. Try again. So I went on, I guess, for about a year and a half of just really trying, and ended up getting my first solo in church. And that was it. You know, I was hooked.
And how ironic, because Whitney, her start was in the church.
Yes, yes. I was hooked not just to the music, but what I knew as a young person, what it would do for people. I mean, I would watch people that I knew were struggling down the street, because we lived in the suburbs, but down the street was a project, a ghetto. And a lot of the kids would come to our church because our pastor was trying to kind of mix the two environments. Mm-hmm. And I would see how, once we all came together with this feeling, mm-hmm. the money didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Our social status didn't matter. And I picked that up as a little kid. And I was like, this is the thing that can bring everybody together.
It's unity.
It's unity. And it's like you said, it's humanity. Mm-hmm. So I was hooked and started doing talent shows and pageants and anything I could get involved in. And I would give it 110%. And then when I was in 11th, 12th grade, I tried out for a show called Big Break with the late, great Natalie Cole.
Mm-hmm. Natalie. Natalie. Yeah. We were friends with Natalie. God rest her soul. And Natalie performed at our home in Atlanta.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Such a sweet, sweet woman. And I was on that show. I was still in high school. And I didn't win. R. Kelly and the Public Announcement won. That was, you know, who we know as R. Kelly now.
Right.
But they won. And they called me at my high school and they said that a company wanted to sign me. So my dad and my mom and all of us went up to New York to meet with these people, and I ended up signing there. And I was a huge fan of Julie Andrews. I mean, growing up, that was like goals, 1,000%. The Sound of Music.
Right.
I had the haircut and everything. You know, I wanted to be the Black Julie Andrews.
Right.
And so when I signed to the label, the first thing they did was they asked me what did I want to do. I was like, first I want to change people's lives, and then I want to meet Julie Andrews.
Right. Right.
And they both happened. You know, I met Julie Andrews at her house. So that was just and she just empowered me with words and things like that. And then the movie Sister Act 2.
Yes. Which we love.
They were writing this movie and I couldn't act a lick. You know, I couldn't act. So I went to audition anyway. It was like 700 girls auditioning for this part, and I befriended Lauryn Hill and a couple of the girls that were ended up in the movie. And
Lauryn hasn't done too bad.
she's amazing. She's just an amazing person. And I didn't get the part, but Lauryn got the part. But Whoopi Goldberg saw me, and she was like, you know, you're not going to get the lead part, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to write you into this movie. And so we went to her house and she wrote that scene with Lauryn and I at the piano. She was like, because even if we only give you 10 seconds of a minute or whatever on film, I want people to be able to hear you. So that was a whole God thing.
Right.
You know,
I believe in that.
That was a whole God thing. And put my record out. And in the middle of my success, I remember feeling like this isn't it. So here I am, you know, on R&B charts. Up at, you know, number 10 on the charts or whatever. And I had a manager at that time and I was like, I don't want to do this like this anymore. And she was like, what do you mean? And then we left that label and went to sign with Puffy. And I recall saying to him after they spent all this money, I don't want to do it like this. I want to be able to take all sounds of music and sing it. You know, why do I have to
be one thing?
Be one thing. I grew up in a Baptist church. I ended up getting a scholarship for classical music. So I was classically trained. And then I love Dolly Parton and I love Mahalia Jackson and Whitney Houston and Jennifer Holliday. So how are we going to figure out how to do all these different sounds? And I just decided I didn't want to do that anymore. So I went on this quest to find myself, you know, not realizing that at 8, 9 years old, when the gift was given, I was already found.
Right.
You know, but I think we lose our way.
That's right.
You know, as we get older and we start paying attention to the wrong things.
Well, I think it's because we're given so many different directions that we can we have too many choices.
Yes.
And when really our only choice should be the path that God has us on.
Yes.
And I think that as human beings, that we look at where someone is, a Dolly Parton, who we and our family worship Dolly. But that's not where you're supposed to be.
No.
God has a special place for all of us to land. And that's what I say about Savannah and her cosmetic line, you know, Sassy by Savannah, that there's and she said it best. Savannah said that women don't support women the way that they should because they feel like we're running out of space. And there's enough space for all of us.
Yes.
And I think that we start looking at, oh, well, now this person made it this way, so I'm going to try it that way.
Yeah.
Well, this person, look where they are. They made it. I'm going to go the route that they did.
Yeah.
I don't need Savannah being Kylie Jenner.
No.
I don't need that. And Kylie, and we love the Kardashians. You know, they've been wonderful to us and very kind.
And paved the way for reality TV.
Yes. And, you know, so we're grateful for that, but we're a different family. And Savannah is a different message, and Kylie has a different message, and she's hugely successful, but I didn't need Savannah to mimic that. I needed Savannah to let her passion be what created that paved the road for her. And I think that that's what happened with us. We let our passion pave the road for us. Now, granted, you know, you had people like the Osbournes and the Kardashians and then us. And, you know, certainly they paved the road. You know, I think that the Osbournes certainly paved the road for reality television.
For sure.
So I just think that we've got to be conscious about not losing sight and not losing the focus of what our God-given purpose is.
Yes. Yeah. And you said a word, passion.
Yes.
Because it took me maybe 9 or 10 years. I was being a worship leader. I was trying to find God any way that I could. And, you know, with just my body, not realizing that everything he was doing, even before I was asking him to do it, was supernatural. You know, and so I stopped. And I was like, I'm going to stop because I think sometimes we just have to pause so that we could hear. He's always speaking in different ways.
What did we just say in the driveway? Did I not just say this to you before you came in, that God speaks to me, and at times in my life when things went wrong, it's when I was not in tune with him to hear that he was shouting out to me.
Yes. And 9 years later, I'm at this festival. I throw a festival. It's called the Love Festival. And there's not a lot of people there. And this guy gets up on stage. I meet him briefly before he gets on stage. And this guy gets on stage with this blonde rock guitarist who looks like he's in his 70s, white guy, blue eyes. And this guy has on a Coogee sweater. It's like 99 degrees outside. I'm like, he's going to die on the stage. And he's playing in front of a keyboard. And I'm in the back, but I hear this voice, and I hear these lyrics, and I have on high heels like this high, and I start darting across the field I have to know who this is, and it's Michael.
Right.
And as soon as he comes off the stage, it was like hearing him for the first time and hearing him talk and meeting him was like someone taking a cord and just sticking it into a wall. That passion came back, and I had to know who he was as a human being. You know, and we got to talking and became friends. And I didn't know any of his story. You know, I didn't know 3 years into our marriage that he had served in the military, combat veteran. I didn't know. And over time, he just started unlocking. And he was helping me out with a project with my brother, because my brother's a singer as well. And we were doing a duet project. I was really doing it for my brother because, you know how we do. Right. And my brother couldn't come. He's totally family first. He had to work. And Michael started doing reference vocals on the songs.
Right.
And a friend of ours heard us singing together. And she was like, do you all hear that? Do you all hear what this is?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, no. And Michael's like, no. And then we start singing together. We go to this church and we sing a love song. And for the first time, I get to say sexy on somebody's pulpit.
Right.
Yeah.
And the audience, the crowd, the congregation is like, yes, they're like loving. It's a love song.
Right.
And I, again, hear this voice from God that you can do it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't, there is no, I'm out the box. There is no tradition in me, you know, in God. And we just started going, you know, to different coffee houses and different events and doing our little songs. Sometimes three people would show up, four people would show up, but we would passionately give everything we had. And it was a healing process for me. And to watch Michael work with these songs, I mean, he was writing like 100 songs a week. I'm like, how do you do this?
Right.
How's this possible? And, yeah, so that was what happened for me, is that I got my passion back when I met Michael.
But that was a God-driven thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I met Julie. Julie worked in a bank for, you know, one of my best friend's family. They owned the town bank, and she worked in this bank. And I actually went in to go to lunch one day, and she was wearing this yellow dress. She was a teller. And it was during the summertime, and, you know, she had this great, the top of the dress was amazing. And I thought, holy crap. I mean, that's some power there. And I said to Bill, I said, who is the chick in the yellow dress? And he said, don't even. Her daddy's a preacher. I said, please, I've laid hands on preacher's daughters before. And you know, the preacher's daughters was always the hottest ones in town.
Yeah.
And so I kept going into the bank, you know, and I didn't have no money then. I had no money then. And so I ended up taking her out to Applebee's. That's right, Applebee's, in case you're listening, send us our gift cards because I just plugged you. And we ended up going to Applebee's, and that turned in from like a 3 o'clock lunch until like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. And I knew from that one lunch at Applebee's that this woman was something like I had never experienced.
Whew.
And then, you know, she had came into Bill's house, which was the first time that we met. And then when I went to the bank, you had on the yellow dress. But when she came into Bill's house, and she, I can remember exactly what she had on. That it was during the winter months. And she smiled, and it changed my life.
Mm.
There was something about the way she looked at me and smiled. And I was like, what is going on? And, you know, and I was fresh off of a divorce, you know, from a ratchet ass, rusty nail, leather sofa looking, treacherous heifer. And so, you know, I felt like, you know, she had, that she opened up something in me that had never, ever, ever opened. Like, I never knew it existed. And of course, you know, me being a heathen, I felt like we needed to consummate this relationship quickly. And she wasn't about all that. I was a hoe. She wasn't. And, you know, I was like, you need to sleep with me. You know, we need to, you know, we need to figure out if we, you know, this is going to work. She's like, I'm not doing that. I'm not, you know, if it's going to work, it's going to work because of the right reason, not the wrong reason. And so, you know, we had our moments during those many, many months of dating, and she wouldn't put out. So, I mean, I had to go find somebody.
Oh, my God. You know, and here we are 25 years later.
To relieve the stress. And, you know, but after that one time, she couldn't keep her hands off of me. She ended up pregnant. We ended up having Chase, and the rest is history, and we're still doing the same thing we did back then. But God led me to her.
Yes,
I don't think that God led her to me. I think God led me to her, because I certainly was not what her parents had envisioned for their daughter.
Mm.
I was divorced, two children, and her mother was my legitimate banker. She worked at another bank.
Wow.
And I remember her mother saying, you need to let me introduce you to someone. It was someone at their branch. And I said, I'm actually seeing this girl. I said, she works at the Bank of Westminster. And Pam said, my daughter works at the Bank of Westminster. Bank of Westminster. And I said, you're kidding. She said, yes. And she said, what's your name? I said, Julie. She said, my daughter's name's Julie. And then all of a sudden, I look back on that conversation now, because when you walked into the bank, Pam's desk was to the right. I can see her face to this day when I said, her name's Julie. She just went, my daughter's name's Julie. Like, oh, you could tell, you could see that disappointment. She's thinking, is there another Julie at that bank? And, you know, we kept it hidden for a long time because Julie did not want her parents to know that she was dating, you know, this hellion. And now, I mean, when we got married, I mean, her dad married us.
Wow. And
now, granted, I think he married us because he wanted to make sure we was married before she had that baby 5 days later. But, you know, I think that God led me to her, because through that, it caused me to want to be a better man, a better human being. And, you know, I was this young guy that felt like I make my own magic. I make my own shit happen. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody helping me. I got this. And I think you're so arrogant when you got your stuff going that you forget God. Until God strips you down and takes everything that he entrusted in you because you wasn't a good steward with it. And God shook me twice. God has shaken me down twice. And he got my attention when Julie came down with breast cancer in 2012. And he ain't never lost my attention since then. Because I made a commitment to God. If you spare my wife and don't take my mother's, you know, my children's mother, I turn my life over to you and I commit myself to you and I will not forsake it. Now, there have been times that I've had to cuss people out. And I ask God to forgive me for that. And I say, God, I know that you know I'm probably going to do it again. But I ask that you help me find less satisfaction in doing it.
I love it.
And so I don't find a lot of satisfaction in cussing people out like I used to. Wouldn't you agree?
Right. Absolutely.
Now, there's some out there that's waiting on me. And I got something for you.
You got something for
him. I've got it pinned up. I'm saving it for you. But right now, a lot of people, I just look at them and I think, you know, they're struggling.
Yeah.
That person's struggling.
Yeah.
So I don't need to add to their burden, you know.
By cussing them out.
Yeah, by cussing them out and then me getting closer to hell. So I'm just going to try not to do that. But I do believe that God, and I've said this to you before, that God led me to you. And I have said to my children that the greatest testimony that I can give you is the love that I have for your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because she made me want to be a better man. And because of that, she created a man who was going to be a better father to you. And Tanya, that's a lot like what you have done with Michael. And don't you feel like, Michael, that as a man, you were at your lowest sitting on that staircase and she said, give me 5 more minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, the strength of a woman. I mean, you know, I grew up, was raised by a strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that I recognized, as a child, I don't think you recognize those things. Mm-hmm. Because it's just kind of like, if you've got a strong mother, you feel safe and they make you feel protected and you know you're okay.
Yeah.
I think that I never realized the true strength of a woman until you watch them give birth to your child. Until you watch them get up all hours of the night feeding that baby and you know, and never, Julie never asked anything of me. With, you know, I raised my first two because, like I said, that was Ratchet Queen that I had those two with. So, you know, I mean, Julie wanted to be a mother. My first one never wanted to be a mother, but Julie wanted to be a mother. So Julie had already had Lindsay and Kyle and was raising them. And then she gave birth to Chase and literally placed her life on the line. I mean, she was in surgery for 2.5 hours because she almost bled to death.
Mm.
And the first, and I say this to Chase all the time when he kind of gets sideways and I have to bring him back. I say, do you know what your mother sacrificed for you? Do you know she laid her life on the line to have you? Do you know the shame that she experienced in this little town that we grew up in, that her father was a minister in the church, and she hid her pregnancy for 7 months? She just went up in extra size clothes. No, people thought, you know, Todd feeding her good. But, you know, nobody knew until she finally had to go. You remember that?
Yeah.
And I said, I'll go with you. And you said, I don't want you to. I have to tell my parents on my own. And
wow.
And I say to him, do you know what your mother has sacrificed for you? She laid her life on the line for you. She almost bled to death for you. And when she came to, the first thing she said was, where's my baby? That's a mother.
That's a mother, man.
And I realized then, this is what it's about when it comes to being a mother, a parent, and recognizing strength. I mean, this woman put her life on the line to give birth to my son, and I'm laying in the floor where I fainted.
You fainted?
Past cold hell. Oh, my God. And
they had the smelling salts.
And when I came to, they was rushing her in. I said, where are you taking her? And Dr. Lacey, I remember that, Dr. Mark Lacey delivered Chase. He said, Todd, we've got to get her into surgery. He said, I can't stop the bleeding. And I started crying. And her dad, who is just batshit crazy half the time.
But all right, just my daddy.
But I love this man because I truly believe that people come into your life for a reason. And he was brought into my life for a purpose. He taught me about God. He taught me about wanting to be a better person. And Julie's mother is a saint. She's going to heaven. Julie's mother is going to heaven, and I'm hanging on to her coat. I got her hem because I know that if anybody can get you into heaven,
it's her.
It's her. And I love Pam Hughes with my heart and soul. But when I tell you, he looked at me and said, let's pray. It's going to be okay. And we stood in that hallway and we prayed as they took Julie back into surgery. And 2.5 hours later, she's in a recovery room.
Wow.
And I'm in the nursery with this baby that's got this huge amount of hair, and I'd never had no kids with no hair. I had slick-headed babies, which I thought was the only babies you should have because they was clean looking. And then I had this one that looked like a little orangutan. And I kept looking at his hair and kept thinking, oh my God, Mama. She said, Todd, shut up. He'll outgrow that. Now, you know when your grandma says you got to outgrow something that you're not that pretty. And so I went in that nursery and sat there with him, and I kept putting a hat over his head.
Oh, no.
And the first thing, that this is the God's honest truth, I cleaned him up. You was sitting there holding him, feeding him, and kept that little hat on his head because he looked like he had stuck his finger in a light socket. And when I brought him, when they brought him to the room for her, and I took him out and handed him to her, she pulled that hat off. And she said, look at his hair, how beautiful. See, only a mama would have said that.
You were like, put it back on.
I was like trying to get the hat back on. She said, leave it alone. She said, he's got beautiful hair. So, you know, I think that God places us where we're supposed to be. God placed you in Michael's life when he didn't know that he needed you, and Michael had no way of knowing that you needed him.
Yeah.
God placed me in Judy's life for her to say why.
That's not
and
true.
And placed me in her and her in my life for me to say thank you.
That's not true. But with that being said, this hour has flown by.
Oh,
so before we wrap up, I want you guys to quickly tell us what you have on the horizon, because I see something right here that's real exciting if we can get through COVID. So tell us what you guys have going on in the upcoming year, and maybe
and then I'm gonna tell you what
and maybe an opening and maybe an opening act for someone.
Oh, yes.
yeah. Well, we got we just did Austin City Limits, and that should be airing in January, and then we're doing the Rose Parade this
Rose
year.
Rose Parade. Yeah.
It's funny because it's us and Roscoe Flats, Lady A's doing it.
Oh, my God.
And
Mickey Guyton.
I love Mickey Guyton.
And she's the best.
Yes.
Mickey Guyton is just an angel.
I love her so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we're going on tour with John Legend.
John Legend.
Oh, you know, that doesn't really impress me that much. Now, his wife, Chrissy, who is my friend that I love dearly, and who I was, we've been on there on Chrissy's show, her former show, and yes. Then her cooking show. Yeah. I love Chrissy and I love John.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love both of them. So you're going on tour with John.
You're going on tour. And he's
a big supporter. And Michael manifested something. We ended up naming our son Legend before we knew John Legend.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite artists.
I love
he's
it.
His favorite artist. And then yep. 9 years, 8 years later,
yeah,
we get the call.
Soul.
How amazing
I love
is that?
The ass. Yeah.
Okay, well, we hate to do it, but we have to wrap up. But you guys have to promise that you'll come back. I mean, this is just the beginning of our
story. It is the beginning, yes. But we're not going to wrap up just yet because I have something else to say.
Okay.
You know by now that I love you both, and I think I'm such a huge fan, and I need for every person that is listening to this podcast, you have to go and stream The War and Treaty, this song, Take Me In, and because it has changed my life, Michael. It has stirred something in me that I haven't felt in a long time, and I truly believe that it is God's mission to use me to help you guys have a bigger platform. And I want you to come into the studio and work with me and Jay DeMarcus with Rascal Flatts. I want to figure out how to best serve you so that you can serve millions. That's what I want to see happen. And however we need to make that happen, however that needs to look, you know, whatever. Am I trying to steal you from another label? Probably. do I have any shame in that? None. But do I believe that you need to have a broader platform? I do. Because let's face it, you are a Black couple in Nashville in a predominantly white arena. And it takes people like you, Michael, and you, Tanya, to open the door for young girls like my Chloe, for children that have something in them, but feel like they're restricted because of their color. And we don't talk about color a lot because I feel like that the more we focus on color, the less progress we make. So I'm not going to focus on you being Black. I'm going to focus on you being my brother and sister in Christ, being my friend, and now being at my family reunions. So guess who's coming to dinner, folks? But I really want to help you as much as you will allow me to help you. And, you know, I'm going to send Chrissy a message when I get out of here because I did not know that you were going on tour with John. And so this is going to be amazing. And I want you both to know that from the bottom of my heart, I knew that I had to meet you. And folks that are listening to Chrissy Confessions, when you hear this, know that this podcast today, and I've had great people on this podcast, is probably my most powerful moment because of this song, Take Me In. I want you guys, I'm going to post today about the podcast. I'm going to tag The War and Treaty in their Instagram. I want you all to go out there and give them a follow because this journey that we're getting ready to take you on with Tanya and with Michael is going to change your lives because I believe that you two have the ability through the gift that God has given you to change lives and to change them for the better. And so, Michael, I want to tell you something, my commitment to you. I love you, my friend. You will not sit on that staircase ever by yourself because you've got Tanya, you got God, you got me. So you won't ever be alone. Tanya, you won't never be hungry again. You ain't going to have to worry about feeding Legend. You ain't going to have to worry about being put out in the streets because that ain't going to happen anymore. Because we're going to come together as a unit and we're going to try to make each other's dreams grow. And we're going to do that by helping each other. So I want you both to know that I love you. I'm grateful that you took the time to come and to sit in on this podcast, that you got to meet Jay. And I want you to know that I believe that God has a greater plan for all of us sitting in this room. But I also believe that that plan includes all of us. So with that being said, I thank you, Tanya.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you both.
Folks, that's going to conclude this episode of Krista Confessions. I thank each and every one of you for tuning in each week. And until next week, make sure that you love the ones that's closest to you and lift those up that can't lift themselves. In Jesus' name, amen.